Welcome to the Smichael Speaks podcast channel. I'm Joanne Smichael, and I'm delighted that you tuned in for relevant leadership learning that will help you continue to soar. Enjoy this episode. I am continuing my conversation with Brian Powell today. We've been talking about the future of work. He is the Chief Human Resources Officer with the Community Solution Education System. Welcome back, Brian.
Thank you for having me.
You told us about TCES on our last time together. I know it's the consortium of colleges, and what I understand is that it is mission and vision driven. What are they, the mission and the vision?
So, broadly, and that's how I'll have to do this, you know, we say that our mission is to prepare innovative, engaged, purposeful agents of change to serve our global community. And I think that that's an aspirational statement that's almost universal for higher ed. I think that we really do mean that. We live and eat and breathe innovation. And I think that's why our system, we're the only private nonprofit higher ed system in the United States. And I think that that's because we are an innovative, purposeful, progressive organization. And so our mission and our values somewhat converge there. I think where we succeed is helping universities and colleges who join us that cooperation, not competition, is the key to their prolonged success. And so how we give them access to expertise, to top shelf technology, to guide their marketing and enrollment strategies, and increasingly now with the advent of AI as a key component of the workforce, what are we doing with their human capital and their human resources strategy and workforce plan? So very, very exciting place, very dynamic. And I've enjoyed every day that I've been here.
That's cool. That's very good. Now, prior to the Community Solution, you were at Chapman University, University of California, Merced, Columbia University, and lots of other distinguished institutions. Your focus has always been on leading groundbreaking HR programs, from centralizing operations to fostering strategic alignment across diverse campuses. And that's why you're here. It's that deep expertise that makes you really uniquely qualified to share your insights on the future of work. And I appreciate someone who has that breadth and depth of experience.
Thank you.
Last time we talked about AI and the need to upskill and reskill, especially for leaders. Now, today we're going to talk about this whole notion of a talent pipeline. How is all of this upskilling and reskilling connected to having a talent pipeline, an internal talent pipeline?
Internal talent pipelines are the key to the future. We have decreasing birth rates in the United States and in Western society. And we have an increased opportunity to leverage automation, machine learning, and AI to do what I like to say, let the machines do the work that they're built to do, which is the work that people currently do. As employers, we also have an ethical obligation, I think, to look after our workforce. In higher ed, it's even more critical. And this is every higher ed. I don't care if you're Ivy League to a community college and anything in between. There are real stressors on the workforce in higher ed. In 2022, the Chronicle of Higher Education coined a great term that I love. It's called the Great Disillusionment, why staff are leaving the workforce just when we need them the most. And there are a lot of pull factors to take people out of higher ed workforce and into industry. And it's real. And it is sustaining itself since the pandemic. And it is something that every HR leader, every executive in higher ed should be looking at and worried about. But I think you can really extrapolate into industry as well. And if you do have an ethical do if you do feel the ethical duty to your workforce, if you do understand that there's anxiety about AI, if you are honest, intellectually honest with yourself and with your employees to articulate the reality that by 2050, it is projected that AI will have eliminated 50 million jobs in the United States. It will create 60 million new jobs, by the way. But 50 million people currently in the workforce will see some degree of modification, if not elimination. It is our responsibility to actually anticipate with optimism, with foresight, and with a commitment to our workforce to actually help them reskill and to contribute in new and different ways, usually at an elevated level. And that talent pipeline to allow your workforce to continue its contribution in a shrinking environment demographically, in a more competitive environment, not just nationally, but globally. I mean, the tech boom is happening on all four corners of the world and everything in between. So your talent is your unspoken currency. It is gold. And maintaining that talent through cultural enhancement, through professional development, upskilling, that is going to make or break employers, particularly those in medium to larger scale enterprises.
I love the focus that you put on talent development because you can waste a lot of, well, shouldn't say that, that's my bias. You can spend a lot of money constantly recruiting. But if you work with whomever you have there and see what talents haven't been tapped, it makes such a difference in their level of commitment, in their level of engagement. It makes it, and you mentioned in the culture of the organization. So glad that you hit on that. All
Thank you.
right. You have talked about this thing called the Fourth Industrial Revolution, and I never heard of it until I was at your presentation. What is it? Well, I know what it is, but tell everybody else what it is.
Sure. I think that if you look at the development of civilization, particularly Western civilization, we had in the mid 1700s the first industrial revolution, and high level, it allowed for mechanization, and it was marked by water and steam power, and you could shift the workforce from agrarian and home-based handcraft to urban and factory based. That amplified, accelerated, so that by the late 1800s, you had the introduction of mass production, heavy machinery, assembly line, and you really see the beginnings of not just manual labor, but also stratified labor with white and gray collar, and the rise of labor unions. The third industrial revolution took place in the last part of the 20th century, and that's electronics and mobile telephony, the computer era, if you will. But now we're in the fourth, and the fourth, I think, is going to be as impactful, if not more impactful, than the first. So this is a seismic shift, and that fourth is the advent of things like quantum computing, the Internet of Things, and the connectivity that that means, and the data that comes from it, machine learning, AI, and robotics. And that is where we're at. And just as if you think of the seismic shift from the individual and local level, to the world level of the first industrial revolution, which was, I don't have to plow a field by hand, that there is a way by which I can leverage machinery to have more product, to feed more people, to really kind of have that ripple effect, to do things not of the agrarian ilk. Now you have the same kind of shift in front of us. We have to contemplate a future where there is a different kind of work, perhaps less work, and more meaningful work. This is so exciting to be really here on, I think, the threshold of what the next 25 years bring. It's going to be rapid. It is going to be monumental. And those of us who get to live through this next 20 to 25 years, we'll probably look back and reflect on a world that we literally left behind. It is so seismic. It is so impactful. I can't stress that enough. And yet it's so exciting.
You know, it's funny you talk about the world we left behind. Sometimes I have trouble remembering life before email, life before the internet, life before cell phones. I heard you talk the I listened to you say the last time we were together, hyperconnectivity trauma. I remember life before hyperconnectivity.
Me
And so, not to say it hasn't caused some trauma for me, but I do remember life before this. So this fourth industrial revolution, this shift is, it sounds like it's going to has the potential to move us perhaps too far too fast. Perhaps.
too. I think we can always make that argument, and certainly from a humanistic lens, it is a great upheaval. But I believe in being optimistic about the future. And while I see the speed of change, I also see the opportunities that can come with it, and the potential for the human experience to actually thrive. Even in a world, it's almost paradoxical, the human experience thriving in a world that's increasingly roboticized. And yet, I think just that. I think that we have a lot of promise and potential ahead of us.
I like the optimistic perspective. I heard you talk about this fourth industrial revolution and the gig economy. First, define the gig economy and then make the connection for us, please.
Sure. So the gig economy is, we're all experiencing it, even if we're not actively gigging ourselves, as they call it. But the gig economy is, rideshare apps, grocery shopping apps. I mean, that's what we use, I think, in our everyday lives. These are just people who are picking up what we used to call side jobs, except the gig economy is populated. It's a mix of demographics now, but it's increasingly populated and led by millennials and Zoomers, who have a very different life perspective. Again, they're the children of the information era. They have been immersed in the trauma of hyperconnectivity and seeing, sweeping changes in the world, from wars to climate change and political instability and social unrest. And their value proposition for life is very different than that of a boomer or an Xer like me, as I said in our last segment. These are individuals who are not just doing a side job. This is a way of life. And so they're and so the gig economy is really built around this idea that I can almost be self-employed by bringing my unique skill set into the marketplace, selling it for a service, and maybe moving on to the next thing thereafter, or taking a break. And so millennials are United States millennials are the most well-traveled generation in our national history. And I think in part it's because they've enjoyed the level of peace and prosperity through most of their life. And but also because their value proposition is very different, and they want those experiences that, myself, my parents, when we were growing up, we dreamed about, we read books about, but we didn't really get to actually partake. Maybe now I do, but not then. These are people that have been immersed in travel and in cultural and social experiences since infancy, and that is the value that they place in front of them, and work will be worked in around that value construct. It won't be the opposite.
They are not living for work. You know, this whole gig economy, I guess it's about 10 years ago, I got exposed and I can't remember the name of the website where you go on it, you put in a description of like I wanted something done, like brochures or something. You put in a description of you want what you want to have done and people respond. these small businesses, mainly individuals respond. You pick one and do that contract with them and move on. And I thought it was the neatest thing. I don't know, was it Upworks? I don't know what it was, but it was neat. And it's another example of the gig economy, because I think this gig economy goes way beyond your Lyft driver and your, yeah. I mean, I think there's a whole lot more opportunities that people have created, even things like Etsy, the small craft people.
Great example.
Yeah, and people make a living on Etsy. So I
You know, you
think.
think of people who make living. Etsy is a great example of a people who upcycle old furniture. It's lucrative, and they have a passion for it. And I think that as to kind of connect what's going on with the fourth industrial revolution and the gig work is there is so much uncertainty with what will be available in the next 5 years. Gigging is actually a very pragmatic way to move to the work that is available with your skill set. But it is, you're correct, it is in everything. I know people who gig grant writing, and they have a skill set, and it is a skill set. And they sell that skill set. They say, if you hire me for X amount, I will produce this kind of grant. I have this kind of success rate with it. And when we're done, if you have another grant, great. I might be able to do it, or I might be in Barcelona and I'll see you in 3 weeks, right?
Exactly. Or I might do it from Barcelona. I mean, there's
Might do it
all
from
these
Barcelona.
opportunities. Yes. You talk about something else, rotational employment, and the Barcelona thing just triggered that for me. What is it, and how does it factor into this fourth industrial revolution and the gig economy, this rotational employment?
I think they kind of go hand in hand, but it is allowing people, as we develop an internal talent pipeline, it's one thing to learn about it. It's just like college, right? It's one thing to learn about it in books and in theory. It's another thing to apply it. To really be successful in this, you have to give people experience. And so a rotational workforce, as you're building your talent pipeline, is really looking at skills and aptitudes, not just education and experience, which is, I think, the paradigm of the third industrial revolution. The paradigm of the fourth industrial revolution is going to be skills, your technical skills and your humanistic skills. That is the currency, and that is the paradigm. And giving individuals who have demonstrated those aptitudes the opportunity to rotate into roles, either in shadowing programs, mentorship programs, or just short-term appointments with retreat rights back to another area, so that they have the security of knowing that they can grow in safety and have that net available for them. They have their retreat right. And so that rotational employment, it is a flavor of gigging, but it's predicated on the idea that you have a longer-term relationship with your employer. And so developing the talent pipeline through a rotational strategy, I think is extremely important. And it's something that we're doing at the Community Solution. We are building what we call a one system workforce, rather than having each of our member colleges self-contained with limited potential for mobility within that environment. You now are able to replicate that sixfold and see opportunities across the spectrum of universities. And so, by allowing internal recruitment, investing in culture building, investing in skills building, and investing in opportunities like rotational employment, over the next 3 years, we are going to build towards that one system workforce so that the opportunities to keep contributing, again, in the forefront, because in the backdrop you have this diminishing interest in working in higher ed, this increasing anxiety over AI and the potential displacements that come with it in the next 5 years. That rotational employment is a way to securitize talent in your workforce and in your pipeline well beyond the normal shelf life that you would have if you're not doing that.
So it's I'm in my mind, I'm thinking it's like an internal gig where you get to spend
That's a
time.
great way to look at it.
Yeah, you get to spend time learning this, and then you get to spend time learning that, and you get to spend. Yeah, that's how I'm thinking of it, as an internal gig. Thinking about the people who I often have empathy for, the people who are left behind in the gig economy, left behind in this rotational employment. What's a leader to do? What's a leader to do to leave fewer people behind?
If you do nothing, you are complicit in leaving people behind, right? So the first thing to do is act. Then you actually have to actively listen. What are the anxieties of your workforce? I mean, imagine you have people who are in IT and they've spent 4 to 8 years getting a degree and certifications in one or two programming languages, only to see the advent of AI, which has access to all program languages instantaneously and can spit code out based upon whether you want C++ or some other kind of language prompt. Think of the individuals who are in executive assistants or in even in marketing, like copywriters and editors. That work can be done using AI-driven apps like ChatGPT or Grammarly or anything else. And so, understanding what their anxiety is, you have to then lean into finding solutions for them so that they don't self-exit prematurely. And leaders then have a responsibility to create the very networks and support structures that I'm talking about, mentorship programs, rotational strategies, really rethinking your recruitment strategy. In higher ed, we often say everything has to be competitively recruited in the open marketplace. And I'm like, does it? If you really want to, if you want to be an ethical leader and you really do want to show concern, why not create a structure that gives your workforce the opportunity to develop its skills and then to compete internally for positions rather than with external individuals who just may have been fortunate enough to have different experiences? And so I think it's an all of the above strategy. And if you do these things, everything with intentionality, everything designed around the employee experience, you can actually move into a place to where if someone is left behind, you at least have the peace of mind of knowing you did everything remotely possible to help that person be included in an outcome that's bigger than the both of us. And if they've chosen not to take advantage of that, if they've chosen to retreat in fear and resistance, okay, that you can't own. And if you have left someone behind that you could have done more for, learn from that and build the programming out. We're going to be iterating a lot. And I think that the difference between a progressive thought leader in this space and a reactive one is that intentionality element. So be intentional, lean into your workforce, listen to them, what their concerns are, develop skills assessments, build skills. That is the new currency. Remember, it's not education and experience exclusively anymore. It is skills. Build skills.
So I want to get together to talk again. And the next time we talk, I want to talk about this global economy. And I want to talk about how you get leaders to understand or to develop a strategy around workforce utilization. And I want to talk a little bit about DEI, which has become a lightning rod. So I'm looking forward to the next time that we get to sit down and talk. And
Very
thank
good.
you again for coming today.
Thank you, Joanne.
Thanks for listening to this podcast. I hope you got tools that you'll actually use and share. Subscribe if you haven't already. I add new and relevant leadership learning all of the time. If you haven't visited the Smichael Speaks YouTube channel, check it out. There's all sorts of new content. All of this is virtual leadership learning that will help you soar.